Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry with Dave Catalano and myself. We got a special guest this weekend. It is Chris Costin from the Muley Fanatics Foundation, Sierra Chapter. Chris is a repeat guest on the show. We actually had you on last year about this same time, maybe a little later into January, Chris. But I wanted to kind of give you the floor to talk a little bit about how you got involved with the Muley Fanatic Foundation and why it's an important organization.
Great to be back and appreciate this opportunity. So the Muley Fanatic Foundation is a Wyoming-based mule deer conservation group, 501c3. I got involved back in 2019. I reached out to a couple of their guys, the interest of starting a chapter here in Nevada. And that was mostly based on their funding model, which is pretty unique for a lot of these groups. They make sure that 70% of the funds raised by each chapter stays in their home state and is allocated by those individuals where they believe it is needed most, because theory there is, you know, we're the guys on the ground. We know where the funds need to go rather than, you know, headquarters making calls on that. So, you know, doing that, it meant a lot of money to stay in Nevada. And that was what I wanted to see, was just a way to help our struggling mule deer herds and try and put as much funding back on the ground here in Nevada as possible. So that was my impetus for starting the chapter, and we've pulled off two banquets now. We've raised over $64,000, and we've put that back on the ground with Endow and with their matching grants. I think that came out to somewhere in the neighborhood of $190,000 that has been put into Nevada wildlife projects and mule deer projects in particular. So it's been a good start, and it's been a lot of fun, and we have another banquet coming up soon.
Before we get into that, let's talk about your mule deer season this last season. That picture you sent me, that's your brother with a heck of a nice buck. That was an archery hunt in California.
That was our early season archery kickoff. So yeah, we spent a few days out there by Hallelujah Junction, and you know, him and another buddy were able to track down two really nice deer and put a perfect stock on them, and it was one of those ones where it was over too quick, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, a lot of good deer this year. I was really impressed with the numbers we were seeing over there. It's my first time hunting that unit. You know, it's close to home, so we all see it a lot. But yeah, I was really impressed with the number of deer and the size class of deer that we were seeing.
You seeing a little bit bigger, like antler growth from, you know, last year's precip and the habitat?
Yeah, it seemed just seemed like everywhere with all that water. I mean, I've seen greenery like I've never seen, and animal populations that, you know, just unbelievable. And especially, I guess, for the antler growth, with having that much green and water everywhere, it changed their typical habits, is kind of what I saw, because they didn't have to go high so fast. You know, they could hang lower, they could stay in that good veg. They had more water, more dispersed, they weren't concentrated. So yeah, maybe that was part of it. Just, you know, that the animals weren't concentrated in just a few areas. We were just seeing them kind of all over the place.
When we were talking about this, your brother is now 2 for 2 on archery tags and archery bucks.
Yeah, I kind of helped create a monster. We first tag in Nevada in the Rubies last year, and I took him into one of my little secret spots, and we rustled up a nice 4x5, and he made a great shot on it. We ended up recovering it the next day because it just really got into a dark little hole and passed away. But yeah, he got a great buck out of the Rubies, and then this year followed it up with another great 4x3, and yeah, so he's 2 velvet bucks in 2 years.
Jeez.
That's awesome. That is fantastic.
And what about you? You drew Nevada, right?
Yeah, I drew the 021 late archery and actually just wrapped my hunt up yesterday.
And you're processing right now, right? That's what you said earlier when we were trying to schedule this?
Yeah, exactly. I had to clean up a space on the counter so I could do the interview with you guys and wash the blood off my hands.
Yeah, good. Very good.
That's a great combo.
Now, on that hunt, do you want to go through it or not? You tell me.
I can. It's one of those things that I guess I'm getting really good at, because I did this one other time in Rubies. But, you know, I started in, as soon as we got back from our elk hunt, I started scouting in the dog skins and the Petersons, and I probably turned up 30 different bucks and saw 60 plus does. I mean, there was four really high quality shooters, probably a 30 inch wide fork in the dog skins, and another 160 inch 4x4, just nice heavy 4x4. And then in the Petersons, turned up, I think I sent you the video of that really big, heavy
old 4x4.
He was just a stud. He became my number one target, but he was running with another 4x3 that was just as wide and heavy. But I really was after that 4x4. And on last Saturday, I got 67 yards and was just waiting for him to stand up. I was perfectly placed behind some brush and under some mahoganies, but winds were just pretty incredibly strong, I would say, that day. And after about 20 minutes, they kept getting little swirls, and they finally stood up, but all the does stood up right around the buck, and I had no shot. So they sauntered their way out of my life that day, and then turned them up a few other times, got about 100 yards one day, and the wind shifted again, and I had to run up the hill to get away. And then yesterday, I had embedded just perfect 25 yards under some rocks and brush with another 3-point. And so I made my move, got up in there, was really surprised at how close I got before I realized right where he was. And the does, nobody saw me, but they were getting nervous. It was such a calm day, they might have been getting some wind. And they all stood up, and he started sauntering out, and I was in a real tight kind of window with some rocks. And as I drew back, my arrow tipped the rock and popped off my string. And as it slid out of my arrow rest, it shattered on the rocks, and they all ran out. Luckily, not too far out. They ran around the corner, and the big 4x and the smaller 3x3 stood just uphill of one another, but perfectly in line. But I had a, you know, open vitals broadside on both bucks. And so I drew back, and I look, and my peep is a little twisted, so I'm using my lips to roll it into the right, you know, orient. I come down and do my little saying and get all settled and pop the trigger. And it happened really fast. And I realized as soon as I let the arrow go, I had just settled on the wrong buck. And I put it right through both lungs on the 3x3, and he made it about 50 yards. And again, I watched that big, heavy 4x just pop off up the hill out of my life. So.
Yeah, oh, man. Bummer. It happens. It happens.
But you'd rather go after a nice heavy 4x4 than like a 30-inch forking horn? Because you said you saw a 30-inch forking horn?
He was number one until I turned up.
Oh, dude, that's like...
Yeah. Oh. Both Dave and I like funky-looking deer. Oh,
a 30-inch forking horn?
Just when I start to get confident, I had a season like that this year where I tried to slip an arrow through like a 4-inch gap in the bitter brush at 38 yards, which should be a chip shot, but for whatever reason, I clipped a branch and sent an arrow into no man's land, and... That is what it is.
Yeah, every year I learn something. I do some things right. I do some things wrong. You know, I think it's just part of playing the game, and I enjoy every bit of it. And, you know, this was a really fun year. A lot of these archery hunts, probably you guys too. I mean, sometimes you get one opportunity, one stalk.
Yeah.
And I got several. I got video of all kinds of nice deer. I'll send you guys the one of the big fork. And we turned up another one in the Petersons. I'll try and get some video for you guys, but he's probably a 28 to 30 inch 2x3 that's out there that's pretty heavy too.
So that's just...
You would say overall the health of the herd, the numbers out there are pretty good?
I was really impressed because I've heard a lot of mixed things. The dog skins aren't what they used to be, and either the Petersons, and granted they had a big fire that wiped out a lot of that range, but we've been doing a lot of work out there with Indow on herbicide treatments and reseeding treatments, water projects, collaring studies, so we can see how they're moving, where they're going. So I would say if this isn't as good as it used to be, I would have loved to have seen it, you know, in its heyday, because I was impressed.
Let's take a break. Don't forget, if you missed a segment of the show, if you're an Apple user, go to the podcast app and search for Nevada Backcountry. So, Chris, let's talk gear real quick. What are you shooting? What's your setup?
So, I'm shooting a Solution.
Yeah. Botec Solution. Okay.
Yeah, Botec Solution. That's good, Bo.
Yeah, I just love how easy it is to adjust the cams. You know, I don't need a lot of gear at the house or presses or any of that. So really happy with it. And then I went with that HHA Tetra 4-pin, and it's got a floater in there, which is pretty nice. And I just set it up 30 through 60, and then I can float out to 100 just for some long-range practice. Then I'm shooting those Black Eagle, shooting some heavy arrows, and it's a good setup for me. I had a complete pass-through on that guy and broke a rib on the way out. So.
Oh, nice.
Very cool. What broadheads are you using?
Just the Trophy Takers, and they're the...
Fixed blade, expandable?
Three fixed blades, yeah. No, I stopped shooting expanding broadheads or mechanicals. And I'd like to go to those Iron Will, just single bevels, but I got to save up more money for that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah,
those are
so nice, but, man, they are...
30 bucks a head, basically, right? Yes, it's like 100 bucks for three.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, like 80 bucks for three, 85 bucks for three. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Chris, if you want to try something, it's not a single bevel. I use those Ozcut. It's a single blade, heavy steel thing, but I think it's like 42 bucks for a three pack of them. And here's the thing. They come duller than a butter knife, but if you sharpen them, and I add two complete pass-throughs on my recurve buck, a 40-pound recurve at 27 yards, 26 yards. So if you want to kind of dip your toes into the old school single blade thing, I would highly recommend those Ozcuts. Let's switch gears. Upcoming banquet, March 2nd, and it's at, if I screw this up, correct me, Latitude 40?
Yeah, so what it's South 40. It's
South 40.
South 40 Reno, yeah, and it's down there off South Meadows Parkway. Found this place through the Full Draw Film Festival. I didn't even know they were really there, and we were looking for a bigger venue, and I went to the Full Draw Film Festival and saw the place and thought how well it would work for us. We're trying to go up in attendance this year, and year three, so we're planning some big new things. We got a real fancy prime rib dinner planned and a whole bunch of new prizes and games. So this will be by far our biggest year yet. So we're pretty darn excited about it. And yeah, Reno South 40.
Reno South 40. Okay.
Reno South 40 over in South Meadows. What plaza?
Kind of kitty corner from the new DMV. And it's next to like a golf.
Yeah, near that new, what, the big old sports complex, too.
Yeah.
This is going to be the hardest hitting, most serious question of the interview, Chris. Is the spinning wheel coming back?
We cannot have a banquet without the spinning wheels.
Man, thank God. Yeah, my wife spins me straight into the poorhouse banquet.
Both of our wives sat there just spinning that darn thing, just handing 20s. And I was like,
"Yep,
I really hope this is worthwhile."
And it's usually your brother running that thing.
Yeah, I have. I have a couple of my brothers that help out, a couple of my sisters that are always there. And then, all of our other board members and volunteers, they bring in. It's a family affair, so they've all got some family there, and I've got a bunch of mine. And we're trying to make this one the most family-friendly event that we've had. You know, we're offering kids tickets this year, couples tickets, special table pricing and whatnot. And we're really putting together most amount of firearms, the biggest amount of prizes that we've ever had. So
nice.
We're pretty excited about it.
Anything in particular? I know there were a couple really cool hunts last year. Anything that you can talk about yet as far as prizes at this year's?
Yeah, we've got some. We're definitely going to have that Argentina dove hunt again, and they're going to offer some fishing along with it while you're down there. I'm pretty sure we'll have another mountain lion hunt. There's some talk about possibly getting a guided hunt going, more local, from another local houndsman. And then it looks like we have a good lead on a local boy who moved down to California and bought a big chunk of land. It's should be a blacktail hunt guided. That one should be fun. And we're going to try and see if he can't throw in a youth hunt. Same deal. So possibly two hunts with him. And there's also some word of pig hunt that hopefully all this stuff does, especially when people hear, the mission and what we're doing, they usually get behind us. So we might have another hunt in there. So this should be the biggest amount of hunts. We've got Endow Heritage turkey tag for 2024 too. So that'll be nice.
Oh yeah.
Ah, really cool. What'd you win last year, Dave?
I won that big old cooler.
That's right. Man, Chris, I don't know. What do I got to do to win here, man? My CPAs came with me that first year. They won guns. Dave came with me last year and won the big cooler package. I'm still high and dry, man. We got to fix this.
Your wife needs to spend more money on the wheel.
No, that ain't happening.
I don't know. We might have to get Dave to bless all your raffle tickets.
That's right.
Oh, no kidding. Well, hey, I'm excited. You mentioned something and then you kind of kept rolling, but kids tickets this year. You're making it a family-friendly event, which I, as a father to four, I appreciate.
Yeah, so what we did this year, we didn't do a membership for them, so that saves money. We basically just put it in at the cost of our meal, so it's $55.
Okay.
But we game with these guys. We're going to have prime rib with a carver there, so we're going to have a carving station, prime rib, a nice chicken dish, a whole bunch of good stuff. So we really stepped up the menu to make sure everybody gets a really good meal this year. And then, yeah, we brought couples tickets down to $165, a standard ticket's $90. We kind of played with the memberships that way and tried to, you know, spread it out a little to make it a little easier on everybody. It's crazy how the cost of everything has gone up so much. So we're trying to keep everything as low as possible to allow as many people, you know, to come and enjoy the event as we can.
Very, very cool. So one more time, Chris, go through the date and location.
Okay, so it's going to be March 2nd, and it's going to be at the South 40, which is in Reno, at 1445 South Meadows Parkway. And I'll send you guys a picture. This year we've got one of those QR codes, so it's real easy. You just take a picture of it, hit that little QR code. It'll take you right to our ticket site. It'll have all of our donation stuff. It'll also let you get registered for the live auction ahead of time. It's going to email you your ticket through that with a QR code, so you don't have to worry about anything. You just bring your phone in. We'll scan your QR code for your tickets this year. It should be brand new kind of setup, making it easier on everybody and really have a blowout night.
Definitely looking forward to it.
Dave and I will be there with bells on.
Yep.
I can't wait to see you guys and see everybody. It's becoming a good family. It's a good group that we're all, you know, getting together and doing this every year for Nevada's wildlife and for the mule deer in particular.
And I want to reiterate to listeners too, 70% of all the money raised stays in Nevada, directly benefits our mule deer herds, all wildlife really when it comes to these reseeding projects. I don't know of another organization where that high of a percentage of the money actually stays in the state.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That's why everybody, all of us, work so darn hard to put these things on, to get these projects out, to work on the water projects, to work on these collaring projects, and to work so hard for the banquet and to just how generous everyone who shows up is.
Coupled with the Endow funds, with the match and everything else, the more money that we can get going for the Muley Fanatics and the banquet and just projects in general, it pretty much doubles. So if you provide $20, we're able to use about $40 on the ground. That $80,000 turns to $160+.
Oh, 100%. It's incredible. When our $64,000 in just 2 years turns into $192,000.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a big win for Nevada.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a Nevada sportsman.
And the reality is it benefits all wildlife. I mean, I'm a mule deer guy. That's what gets me going. I like mule deer.
Oh, yeah.
But even if you're a diehard elk guy or a diehard sheep guy or whatever, I mean, the reality is these projects that the Muley Fanatics Foundation are involved in, it benefits everything on the landscape.
Everything.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I was just thinking about is, you know, that funding model, that 70% in Nevada, there's 17 chapters, you know, that are doing this across the West. And that 30% that goes back to headquarters, that's also used for major mule deer projects across the West, for legislation, for lobbying, for all these things that, like we said, our Nevada hunting heritage. Those things are being protected across the West. Those projects are being funded across the West with that 30%. So, I mean, that's just another thing that a lot of guys, you know, it's not only the 70%, it's that 30% from 17 chapters is going to mule deer conservation across the West in entire habitat. So I know we all love going out of state too, and it's just, that's another important thing to think about.
Absolutely. Hey, Chris, thank you sincerely for taking the time. Dave and I will see you March 2nd at South 40.
And we wouldn't have as much success as we do if it wasn't for you and Dave's support. So I really appreciate it, and I can't thank you guys enough.
Don't go anywhere. Coming up after the break, we'll hop right back into it. If you're anything like me, you've gotten the enough is enough speech from your significant other. Before you go out and do something foolish this season, get in touch with my guy, Irvin. He's got plenty of man cave options to protect those priceless mounts and might even help save your marriage along the way. Just go to outwestbuildings.com. Thanks for hanging in there over the break. We are back. Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight Rifle. And I'm excited to announce this. I actually saw on the website the 243 Howa Superlights are now in stock. And that's the caliber I've been looking forward to.
It's
a perfect kid's gun.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk meat aging. For successful hunters out there, you got a deer, an elk, a sheep. There's two kind of methods I'm familiar with, the wet aging and dry aging. I got my preferences, but before I go, Dave, we've gone over field care of meat. Now you right. get it home, it's in the cooler. What are you doing with it?
So I do the dry method, dry and cool, and let it hang for about a week. They always say like a week to 2 weeks. 2 weeks is kind of like your cap. After 2 weeks, you should be really monitoring temperature, humidity. Just, I don't want to do that.
You don't have the patience.
I don't have the patience for it. So let it hang for about a week till it gets nice and crusty.
Yeah, where do you hang it?
So I have my workshop fully insulated. So when I had it built, I had them like just insulate the bejesus out of that thing. So it stays really cool in the summer. So
gotcha. Okay.
Which is super nice.
For early season deer, yeah.
Correct. Yeah, or antelope or
whatever.
You know, whatever. So, yeah, let it hang there for a week and then get into processing it.
Okay.
So, yeah, wait for it till it's nice and got a nice crust layer to it.
I'm a dry ager myself. Later in the season, I use my buddy's shop. It's a steel building. Hangs out at like right around 40, mid-40s.
Oh, that's and, nice. That's a good hang temperature.
Yep. And he's got a meat pole in there and everything, so I'll hang it there like you.
Oh, so you're cheating.
I am cheating.
You have like a meat hanging thing. I'm over there like the winch of my UTV and hoping I'm not going to break something. Oh, dude.
No, I got the setup thanks to my neighbor. Big shout out to Clell Nelson. Thanks, buddy. No, and then I was going to say too, man, an old refrigerator. So for early season stuff, look, it'll probably do you some good. Clean the beers out of the garage fridge.
Yeah.
Hang the meat in there. Yeah. Or if you want a second one, you can get a used refrigerator for like $50. You don't want to freeze.
No.
So like 33-ish to like low to mid 40s is about perfect. But I go out and I check it and you can do the squeeze test.
Yeah.
And as soon as it gets that crust on it, and what that is, basically the enzymes are breaking down that connective tissue and all that stuff. So every time someone tells me I don't like mule deer or, you know, antelope, whatever, it's gamey.
Right.
It starts in the field with meat care, but then age it. The older the animal, age it a little longer. And I'm like you, I can only see quarters hanging so long before I'm like, man, this is, I want to eat this.
Right.
So,
or you start like looking at like, okay, have I gone too long? Is it going to be freaky weird inside or something?
I was going to use an example because I don't let it go past a couple weeks and I get it. As long as that temperature stays good, man,
yeah,
I'll let it go.
The used refrigerator thing, that's a great idea. You're going to have to find a pretty old fridge because do they even make like full on only refrigerators?
They still make those, but here's the thing. Get one with the freezer on top. All it is insulation between the bottom refrigeration portion of the freezer. You can punch holes and put hooks in there and just hang. And you're not going to screw anything up.
That's why I hang out with you, man. Because you have these fancy ideas. You got cool friends.
I'm a tinkerer, man.
You're a tinkerer, yeah.
Hey, get one for $50 and punch a couple holes, put some hooks. You're good to go. But I was going to say, some of the best meat, it hung for like a month and a half.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it was whitetail. It was my dad's whitetail from Montana.
Yeah, that, I got to say, the whitetail to me has been the best meat I've ever had in my life. When I was in school in Illinois, that's what I lived on. I think I've mentioned it before because I was a starving college kid, but shooting those Midwest whitetails out of the cornfields, and then you let them hang a bit because back there you got to turn the heater on.
Yeah.
Can't leave them in the garage because it's.
It'll get down to 7 degrees or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
So, but yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
So I've seen videos for people listening. This is not an endorsement. This is not Henry telling you to do this, but I've seen videos where they've taken like a prime rib that's aged for like years and they've dry aged it. There's going to be a lot of waste. The crust is super thick.
Yeah.
But they've trimmed all that off and eaten just the good meat left. And so supposedly, as long as you keep it below like mid-40s, you can age that stuff for a long time. Nobody do that and get sick, though, and then blame me.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just anecdotally. So, and then I wanted to go into a little bit. Both you and I dry age. I think that's about the best, especially for wild game. However, wet aging. I have done this before.
You have?
Okay. I have. And basically all it is you're sealing the moisture in the meat. You can use saran wrap. You can use plastic bags. Here's the one caveat to that. If you wet age, I would not stretch it past about a week, even in a cool temperature, because that moisture is just...
Oh, I can imagine.
It'll get funky.
Super careful with the wet age. I just stick with the dry stuff. I mean...
That's probably smarter, Dave, but... I had a year where it was like everybody scored on tags and got stuff. And so I even took, for you purists out there listening right now, send me your hate mail. I'll deal with it. But tenderloin and backstrap, I even did ground with that. The whole deer.
Oh, because you had so many.
Because I had so much. Yeah, there were so many in my family. Everybody had scored. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? I got all I want. I just want ground.
Yeah. That you can just classify that as your, what's that, Wagyu?
Wagyu,
Wagyu.
High-end ground.
Super high-end.
Everything. Cleaned it, wet-aged it, because I knew. I was like, it's all going in with some beef suet or pork suet. I forget what I used. Yeah. But, so I did that. I let it sit in the refrigerator for, I don't know, like 4 or 5 days. And then got it out, and then in the grinder it all went. And it was good.
Yeah.
But again, it was ground, you know, by the time you add taco seasoning, it's like hard to screw up, man.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But, you know, and on that, you still got to, do you still cover your animal when it's hanging?
What do you mean? When I'm dry aging?
Yeah, when you're dry aging.
Oh, no. I don't leave it in the game bags or anything. Oh,
okay.
Because that'll keep that, it'll prevent that crust from forming.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. No, I hang that stuff raw. And in fact, with my dad got a heck of a nice deer a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And
I would say so.
Yeah. He gave us half of it. And I've got a shady side of my house. So I actually, and I got an old school laundry line thing. There's no lines on it anymore, but the posts are there. I actually hung the quarters outside at night. It was getting
nice.
It's getting down to 36 degrees or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'd hang all the stuff outside and it was perfect.
Yeah.
So no, I don't. Okay. I get that. Yeah.
I was just checking because I know I've read up on some of this, and some folks will still have the game bags on to keep the bugs and stuff off and this and that. And so it's like, interesting.
Yeah, no, if it's cold enough, I've never had issues with bugs. No. I think keeping that game bag on, even if it's like the cheesecloth stuff, I think it prevents that crust from forming.
I would assume so, or it would just stick to it. You know,
you'd be peeling off chunks.
Yeah. Using a high quality game bag in the field is huge.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you've got to. The cheap 99 cent ones just pass on them. Because if you use a really good high quality one, you just clean them and reuse them.
Yep. So. I've been using my, I believe it's It's either tag bags or caribou game bags.
Yeah, I've got the caribou game bags.
The synthetic ones?
Yeah.
I've been using those for years now and just soak them in cold water and a little scoop of OxyClean.
Bing, bang, boom. Come out fine.
Yeah.
Use them next year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, cool.
All right, so that's meat aging in a nutshell. Hopefully, everyone listening right now, you all were successful and you're aging your meat appropriately. On that note, let's take a break real quick. Thank you very much to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Hey, go see Andy and the crew at Truck Envy. All your accessories, camper shells, suspensions, lifts, you name it, they've got it at Truck Envy in Reno. Coming up after the break, we'll get into a little bit of processing now that you've got some finely aged meat hanging in the garage.
Second here, we just got done talking about aging meat. I think we're going to get into a little bit of processing right now. Some of the big things you really need to be aware of when you are trying to process your own animal.
Quick shout out to Hunt and House Archery Center. I actually used one of those Tim's knives processing that my dad's deer.
Oh, you did?
What the heck are they?
Edge?
No, it's like the little single piece thing, lightweight deal.
With the surgical blades?
It's a solo hunter branded knife.
It's a solo hunter blend knife. Oh.
Yeah. It was great. Especially for taking the roasts off and everything. Yeah.
Is it kind of like shaped like a fillet knife or is it more of a just like a skinny?
It's like a little caping, probably 3 inches long blade, traditional kind of caping outline, but it's the single piece of steel, like lightweight.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a fixed blade, which I like.
Yeah.
So I use that. Like I said, shout out to Hunt and House Archery Center. Not just archery. You can get a heck of a knife there, too.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to the processing thing, Dave, could be a deep rabbit hole, depending on how far you want to go down it.
Oh, and how big the animal is.
Bingo. What is your setup? Do you take roasts out and all that?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I try to process it. You know, I'm not schooled as a butcher or know like
same
how to properly do all those fancy cuts.
Yep.
I've YouTubed a lot of it over the years and followed individuals that do process. So I do what I feel is works for me. You know, so far the mouth hasn't complained. So that's kind of works.
Perfect.
Yeah, it kind of works. So, but you know, first thing I do is I always set my area up. I always set it up first before I start dealing with the meat. I set it all up, do a pre-clean on everything, and then make sure I've got everything I need. It's like the three main things that I always verify that I've got and they're ready to rock and roll, a really good knife set. Main one is being the filleting knife because that one's going to be the one cutting around the bone and getting into those little crevices and stuff. And
exactly.
So that one's got to be super samurai sword sharp. And then my meat grinder, make sure that thing's all operational and I got everything dialed in on that. You know, the head's been frozen for, you know, whatever. It's frozen all year, but it's in its freezer case. So I get all that stuff dialed in. I do recommend if you are going to start processing your own meat and you're looking at like grinders and stuff, get something that's 3/4 of a horsepower or bigger. Before I bought mine, I borrowed a buddy's 1 year and it was like a half horsepower thing. It was like a 62 Volkswagen bus trying to go up a hill.
Okay.
I mean, it was like, bad and it heated up so bad. We had to, processing took about 3 times as long because you had to let that dang thing cool down.
Cool down.
So,
what do you use?
I use the Carnivore,
the Cabela's
yeah. Carnivore. The wife and I picked it up years and years and years ago with all of our Cabela points. And it's great. It's a 3/4 horsepower and all the attachments, so it works out great. And then, obviously, the last thing is either one of those suction bag
vacuum
machines.
Vacuum sealers.
Yep. Or, you know, butcher paper, and then label everything.
I'm a vacuum sealer guy,
yeah,
and
that's
I am. Like you talking about the 3/4 horsepower grinder, vacuum sealers are a buy once, cry once thing in my book.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've tried the cheap things. They always crap out after a couple deer.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Picked up a really high-end one as well, and it's been working great for about the last 5 or so years. It just does what it's supposed to. And then the wife had to have a dehydrator for jerkies and what have yous and such. So.
Yep. We use a bigger KitchenAid
with the grinder
attachment, and that thing has been great, especially my wife bakes a lot. So unfortunately for you, Mr. Allergic to yeast.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how she expresses thanks, is by baking things.
Yeah.
And every time you do something nice for us, she's like, oh, I'm going to bake it. Oh.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, brewers, yeast, and bakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that KitchenAid gets a workout, and I will say, not the smaller one, but the bigger size units.
Yeah, we've got one of those as well, but I've never acquired the grinding component to it.
Well, if you got one, why?
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's, can't miss it. So I make sure all that stuff is ready to rock and roll, set up. It's my OCD. Everything's got to have its place on the counter. When we redid our kitchen and stuff, we have it's 6 foot wide by 14 feet is the countertop.
Like an island? Oh, a countertop. Okay.
Yeah, the island. You know, the big island area. And so that's like processing central.
Lysol wipes. I clean everything with Lysol before I even start. And here's why we're doing this segment is Dave and I were talking about ideas for the show. I can't tell you how many friends I've got that still take it to a butcher. And I'm not saying that's wrong. If that's what you want to do, by all means, do it. But there's a lot of satisfaction, and I just don't know any better because it's what my family does.
Yeah.
Processing your own game meat, I know it can be a little intimidating. I mean, holy smokes, a good boning knife with a flexible blade like a fillet knife.
Yeah.
A smaller, sturdier to kind of get in there and get bigger cuts out. Couple YouTube videos, a big cutting board.
And a really nice bottle of bourbon.
Really nice bottle of bourbon. You are off to the races, man. No, I mean, it's not. I think more people should do it.
Yeah.
It saves you money, and you know you're not getting Randy from Lovelock's deer that he shot, you know, 2 weeks before you or whatever. Yeah. You know, because you see the whole thing from start to finish.
Yeah.
It's not butcher shop, and I shouldn't say that. I don't know what the process is behind the scenes at butcher shops, but I know for me personally and my neuroticism, I like seeing the animal hit the dirt and then aging it myself at my own house and processing it.
I'm the same way. I like seeing the whole process, and it's nice when you open the freezer up and you're like, yep.
I did that.
I did all of this.
Yeah.
From A to Z.
Yes.
Yep.
And we have a great resource here in Reno. Shout out to Winco. Winco will sell you beef fat trimmings, pork fat trimmings, dirt cheap. I think it's $1 for like a couple pounds.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, beef or pork.
So you can do your own ground and the resources are out there. You'll save yourself money and the enjoyment. Maybe I'll post. My wife's weird about kids' pictures on social media. I was going to say I'll post a picture of the family processing, but I got to run that by the boss first. But it's a great family activity. So there we are, Dave. You got everything set. You got your bottle of bourbon. What are you doing first?
Taking a shot of bourbon.
Bingo. Yeah. A couple.
No. Yeah, like I said, I take the hindquarters.
Right.
And I will debone that. Just pull all that meat off of the bone. And then I'll usually save the bones for the dogs because they love sitting in the backyard and on those things for a couple weeks. And then I'll just start figuring out how I want to cut up the meat. You know, I've got a big bowl that is strictly all trimmings for the grind.
Right.
To grind everything. Got that set up, but then I'll just start cutting out the roasts, and then I'll start cutting out some of the steaks. And depending on how, like you were saying, you know, 1 year you had so many animals, you're like, okay, we're going ground everything. So in years that does happen, if we have an elk and a deer and an antelope, I'm going to put a lot more to ground, and then I'm just going to take the premium cuts
right,
and turn those into like round silver dollar steaks or something like that, or, you know, whatever it might be. Go through it all, and then depending on the animal, if it's an elk, I'll do the ribs and pull some rib meat out for ground.
Neck meat and all that.
Oh, yeah, as much neck meat as we can get, and then call it good.
I would say for people listening, you know, if you haven't started processing your own meat yet, all that silver skin, all that tendon stuff, do the trimming work up front, because that stuff will eat up the insides of a grinder. I mean, it'll burn up grinders trying to feed it through there. So take a good, holy smokes, we'll spend a good couple hours trimming all the meat.
Yeah.
Getting all that silver skin off, getting the fat off, all that stuff.
All of that.
And man, once you're left with just the meat, it goes so much faster.
Yeah.
But it's that putting the prep work in up front. And I made that mistake years ago, and living back east, killing whitetails in North Carolina, you get lazy at a certain point and you're like, to hell with it. It's all going in the grinder. You don't do as much trimming, you will make your life a nightmare.
Oh, so, yeah. That grinding, the wheel, the
yeah,
whatever that thing's
binds
called.
Up.
It binds up, and yep. then you can tell because then the grinder starts getting real hot.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like so. Frying egg hot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It can get toasty, but
do the work up front. But again, I mean, those would be my tips for people listening. The biggest cutting board you can find.
Yeah.
My wife got me one year as a gift. I want to say she went to that Resco.
Oh, yeah. Over there off of like Mill or whatever that is.
Moana. And yeah, it's a commercial kitchen place in Reno.
Yeah.
She got one of those big, you know, feet by feet cutting boards.
Yeah. I actually, family old world Italian, so my mom's made this for my mom probably 30 years ago and still have it. She uses it when she's at the house. She's making the homemade, you know, from scratch, you know, pasta, then gnocchi, raviolis, all that stuff. It is a 4 foot by 5 foot piece of wood that is like furniture grade.
Okay.
Like lumber, sanded the edges off, made it all nice and everything.
Sealed it with like cutting board sealer stuff.
And... Well, like oils, like sesame oil and avocado oils and stuff like that. Just let that just soak it in.
On that note, you ready to get out of here, Dave?
I am. I'm ready.
All right. Final thoughts. You're holding up your notepad.
Oh, yeah. My final thoughts are I'm going to go shoot my bow.
Tom Gresham at 11 on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.